Brought to you by Burr Foreman and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Results Matter Radio. Stone, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. Good morning, sir. The studio is decorated a little differently this morning. I know it's not in this show, but maybe later today in a different broadcast. Are we talking to the Taste of Atlanta people again? I see posters everywhere.
That's right. Taste of Atlanta is happening, I think, this week. And we have Dale DeSena in here bringing, I think, some chefs so we can talk about all the good stuff that's going to be going on this weekend.
Maybe they'll bring some food.
You would think chefs would bring food.
Yeah, you'd like to think if you're doing a show about food and chefs that they would bring something good
to eat. A sample of what they deal with every
day.
Exactly.
And you'd like to think if you're dealing with a financial advisor, they would bring money.
Yeah, some samples of what they're doing every day.
Exactly. I wonder if he brought any wealth with him.
We'll see.
All right, let's find out. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast from Wilmington Trust, Mr. Mike Morgan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, guys.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Now, Wilmington Trust, what is it exactly you guys are doing for folks?
Wilmington Trust is a national firm that works with wealth management across the globe. And in the Atlanta area, we have one office that covers the Southeast. We work with clients from all different aspects of financial planning, and that includes wealth management, trust and estate planning, trust and estate management, and especially investment management.
Now, in your background, you worked in banking for a period of time. Is that right?
That is correct.
Can you share the difference maybe for our listeners to understand? What's the difference between like having a private banker and then working with a firm like yours?
The private banking experience tends to focus more on the banking side of the equation for our clients. Mm-hmm. And so you'll tend to find that private bankers have more experience with lending, commercial lending, deposits, finding products and solutions for clients who are looking for asset management on the cash and in the debt side of the ledger. For us, we focus more on asset management and taking a look at investments, looking at real estate and other aspects of the wealth management side of the equation that allows for our clients to really get a holistic approach of looking at their future and looking at their current holdings.
Mm-hmm. So how do you spend most of your time? Is it looking for new clients or is it serving existing clients?
My background has been actually on both sides of that equation. I did spend some time looking for new clients in the early part of my career. For the past 7 years, I have been working with clients on a day-to-day basis and servicing those clients that we have with Wilmington Trust.
Now, what does that relationship look like? Like say I'm a client of yours. How often do I meet with you?
Most of our clients will meet with us on a quarterly basis. Mm-hmm. There are clients, depending on what life events they're going through, that will meet with us more often than that if it's necessary. There are some clients who decide that they want to only work with us on a semi-annual basis. So we actually tailor our experience with our clients based on their needs.
Now, how do you know what my needs are? Like, is there at the first meeting or early on in our relationship, you kind of do a profile of what my risk tolerance is, what I'm trying to achieve? Like, what does that first meeting look like?
That's correct. What we do is we sit down with clients and we begin to gather the information that we need to make an analysis of where they are today. Mm-hmm. And what we find is most clients have historically built asset allocation models based on someone's idea of what they think they should take on as far as risk. For most clients, they really can't point to the one thing that says that I should be in this group of assets because I'm this type of risk client. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a questionnaire that has 10 easy to answer questions, and that's going to solve your financial future and all your problems that are going to come your way. And other times it's as simple as you had an advisor who was in place in your early 30s, early 40s, who put an asset allocation model in place for you, and that's just kind of been where you've been since then. So
is that true? Like some people, like that's like getting a haircut in high school and saying, "Well, that'll be my haircut for the rest of my life."
The mullet.
It is, and amazingly, it's one of those aspects of financial planning that is the biggest shock to me when I first started working in the business 16 years ago was the fact that people, because of their lack of experience in the markets, they tend to get an advisor that they really enjoy working with, and they stick with that person, you know, throughout the decades. And as we all know, that we all change as we go through our 20s, 30s, right. 40s, and 50s, so does our need for asset allocation and risk tolerance. So if we aren't continuing to monitor those parameters that we're having to deal with from the financial planning side, we wouldn't be able to correctly judge the type of risk that we're taking as we enter into retirement. So
right, because your needs and your life is different at 20 and 30 and 40 and 50, and then you know you add a kid to the mix or you add aging parents, like your objective probably changes on a regular basis. It's not like you can just set it and forget it, right?
That's correct. And what we find is that the biggest transition is when we go from what's called the accumulation phase of life to the preservation phase of life. And that occurs when someone has a liquidation event for their business, or they go into retirement from the working class. And for both of those events, we tend to see that they quickly make a psychological change to enjoying retirement from an aspect of having more free time and things to do. But on the other side of the equation, they do not make the same change on their investment portfolio. And so as you entered into 2008, we found a lot of clients were over allocated to the risk bucket, to equity buckets, and they felt a lot of pain coming out of 2008 when they probably didn't need to be allocated to that extent.
So you specialize in serving high net worth individuals. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
So what exactly is high net worth? Is there a definition for you guys?
That's kind of interesting. High net worth is really a very great definition. For us, it's a $3 million and above in investable assets. And we work with the average client size we work with is about $10 million here in the Atlanta office. And so we tend to focus on clients who have multiple things going on in their financial lives that needs a complex plan, that needs a team of people addressing those problems and helping them find solutions.
So probably a lot of business owners, I would think. Not a lot of worker bees in cubicles with $3 million in investable assets, right?
That's correct. You do find C-class type of executives that can build up that type of net worth. You also have a lot of business owners, real estate investors, and also a lot of inherited money.
Now, when you're working with a client that has that kind of wealth, I would think that it's kind of challenging to persuade them to move their wealth from where it's at to a new place. It doesn't matter who the new place is. How do you help bridge that shift?
It's actually a very delicate process, and what you're normally looking for is a life event or a transition event for those clients. Sometimes it's the sale of the business where they've gone liquid for the first time, and they need to find an advisor that may be above their current provider's level that was basically handling their SEP account or whatever it may
right.
be. In addition to that, you've got clients who have had significant wealth. We find a lot of times clients in the 10 to 15 million range will have more than one provider. So we are actually looking for an opportunity to assist those clients and eventually become their primary mm-hmm. Point of contact for their financial concerns. But in addition, we understand that we may need to be working with a team of advisors that are outside of our firm to help those clients meet those goals.
So how do you manage those relationships? Do you have relationships with, you must have a relationship with other advisors. You guys got to get along, right? Because it's for the benefit of the client ultimately.
That's correct. And we do. That's one of the things I think about Wilmington Trust that makes us unique is the fact that we are able to work with the client's accountants, attorneys, insurance providers, if they're using an outside insurance provider, and also other investment advisors to come up with a collaborative approach to solving their financial concerns. And so as a result, I think we do a better job of stepping up to become the quarterback for that client, because we understand that it's not our goal to take over that entire relationship, but to be a team player and be part of that relationship.
So how about spousal relationships? Because I got to believe it, at least some of your job would involve maybe a little bit of couples therapy. Or does that not happen at the $3 million and above, and that's just a middle-class dynamic?
Unfortunately, that happens at all asset levels. So there is a bit of a psychology that's played in our industry in dealing with family dynamics, family issues. One of my really good colleagues, Tom Rogerson, who works for Wilmington Trust on a national basis, Tom's position is to work with our families on family governance. And family governance is basically the concept of helping families continue to oversee their morals and standards and family values and have a continuity plan for the wealth and also for those items as well, so that generations 1, 2, and 3 continue on to keep the same types of things in place. So that goes along the lines of playing in that psychological arena of dealing with the family matters and family issues that tend to arise in all families, no matter what the wealth is.
So part of your job is part like a psychiatrist?
It is, although we're not licensed. It ends up being part psychologist.
But I bet family-owned businesses, that's probably presents some unique challenges.
Maybe your corporate clients don't have, right?
Yes. The businesses will tend to, the business owners tend to be completely focused on building and growing their businesses. So a lot of times we can step in and help those people, those individuals, deal with some of the other issues that come along with wealth and accumulating wealth that are off the table, that are in the gray matter world. But it tends to be a situation where we have to be able to wear multiple hats. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to be the investment advisor. We have to be able to be the family advisor. We have to be able to be the person that says, we can't make that purchase. We can make this purchase. We can get down to that level for a lot of our clients who trust us.
Now, is your firm work primarily with kind of older clients or like new rich, like maybe an athlete, a professional athlete? You know, you read so many horror stories, the guy's in his 20s, makes a lot of money, and then their career ends and they have no more money, like, 2 years after they're done playing. Where does your firm, do you work with those type clients?
We actually work with a wide spectrum of clients. Uh-huh. We have offices across the country, and each office tends to have a different dynamic or different demographic that it's attracting. We tend to find most of our clients are above the age of 50. They're either multi-generational wealth clients or they're clients who have sold a business. So we tend to attract those type of clients who are looking for wealth preservation. But at the same time, you do have clients and advisors who bring athletes and
celebrities,
stars and celebrities to us to help to mitigate those.
You've seen those stats. Like, these aren't new to you, right? You've seen, do you know the percentage of athletes that file bankruptcy? I'm sure it's higher than a regular person percentage.
It's much higher. And, it's an amazing, thing that we have clients who or athletes who are coming out in their teens and early 20s that are asked to be stewards of this type of wealth,
right?
Without any sort of training other than the fact that they're great athletes. As a former athlete myself, I know a lot of my former teammates and guys I played against in the baseball world that went on to play ball. Some of them dealt with those problems. Some of those guys were able to overcome those problems. But it tends to be that there is not enough advice, and those guys have a tough time finding someone to trust, to the extent that the NFL, just a few years ago, probably about a decade now ago, in the Players Union decided that they wanted to make sure that the advisors who were working with NFL players were approved by the NFL player board.
To prevent them from, when you have a lot of money and all these relatives come out of the woodwork and all these, people
with great business opportunities
from your neighborhood that all of a sudden is a financial planner that knows of a great opportunity, ground floor opportunity. I mean, it must be really challenging for them to navigate.
It is. And one of our core or one of my core components in working with clients is looking at cash flow. So when I look at a client's investment portfolio, I'm not focused on the dollars that they have as far as assets under management. The old thing where you're carrying around your big long number and that's your number for retirement. retirement comes at different ages and different sizes for all of us. And so for an athlete that's in his you know, late 20s, early 30s, and all of a sudden he's retiring and most of us are just starting our careers.
Sure.
So if you focus with that client or that athlete on cash flow and helping them understand that we are we're basically trying to replicate their lifestyle in retirement using the assets as our employer versus using the NFL as our employer or the MLB or the NBA. And for those reasons, if you have that change in philosophy, then you realize that the assets you have are now, you know, the things that are going to work for you moving forward. And most athletes don't see $5 million, $10 million as a business or as a cash flow generator.
Like a machine, right? They got to work it as, like, that's a money machine for them.
That's right. That's right. They see it as, here's an extra $5 or $10 million, and I got to figure out how to spend it. And so if American businesses ran with the same format, we would basically be out of business as a country pretty quickly. So we as individuals have to change our philosophy as we change from wealth accumulation to wealth preservation to really focus more on cash flow and treating ourselves and our portfolios as a business.
Now, how do you guys deal with the interest rates? Like right now they're at historic lows, but I mean, people are always threatening that inflation's around the corner. How do you guys help them manage that?
This has probably been
like you tell them no watching CNBC. Like, what are the rules?
That's number one rule in our book is stay away from all the news media. It's been a tough road to navigate for the last 5 years. We are in uncharted territory as far as the Federal Reserve's intervention, and so for most of our clients, it's been a tough road because they're looking for dividends and interest to pay those bills, to generate that cash flow.
So dividends is an important component to a lot of this wealth preservation strategy?
It is today. Historically, it wasn't as much when interest rates were much higher and you could get the yield that you were looking for on your fixed income vehicles. But in 2013, we for the past 18 months, we've been trying to find sources for clients to generate yield that's equivalent or replacement for the yield that they've lost over the last 5 years in the fixed income world. It's tough to navigate because at some point in time, you will see a turnaround in interest rates, whether it's driven by the Fed's raising rates or whether it's driven by, you know, the great rotation that everyone's talking about in the fixed income markets. One of those two events will eventually cause interest rates to go higher. And as a client, you obviously don't want to be holding the bag when those interest rates start
to
move. When the music stops.
Now, is there anything that you do strategically as a firm, because all the baby boomers are retiring, you know, what, thousands of them on a daily basis? So
I think it's 10,000 per day.
10,000 per day.
The number is 10,000 per day.
So now you take those people out of the workforce, and now they got to preserve, right? They got to move to that second stage. That's a great opportunity on one hand. But then what's the repercussion of that, pulling all those brains and everything out of the economy?
Yeah, that's one of those things where you have to look at the demographics and the trends that are occurring in this country and across the globe in developed countries. For us, looking at the removal of employees in the workforce and having them become dependent on these assets that they've accumulated over their lives is a transitional event that I don't know if any of us have seen in our lifetimes.
At this magnitude, right?
At this magnitude.
10,000 a day?
That's correct.
Starts adding up to real numbers after a while, huh?
And when you start to look at the unemployment numbers and just the unemployed numbers,
right.
Those are two different facts. I mean, if someone chooses to leave the workforce to retire, they're not included in the unemployment numbers, but they are now unemployed and they're dependent either on the federal government to give them a Social Security check or they're dependent on their portfolios to live. And so they're going to be a dependent on the system for a while to come. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know what the long-term effects are going to be for the markets and for the fixed income world and the unemployment rates and those types of things. But we can definitely see that that they're having a big effect and that it's going to continue.
Now, what are some of the things that your clients tell you that keeps them up at night? What are they most concerned about?
I would have to say the biggest one is risk, and that's probably generated by 2008's market activity. Now, you can say this is the most hated market rally in the history of this country. You know, it's amazing that we're continuing to see new highs on the S&P 500 as other problems persist across the globe. But at the same time, there's a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. I know it from
clients. Still a lot of cash sitting?
Still a lot of
cash. Even though the market's up this much?
That's correct. And you know, if you look at...
How does that happen?
Well, a lot of it has to do with volume and trading and those types of things. Some of it has to do with the fact that, you know, we have to consider the fact that we went from $8 trillion in national debt to $16 trillion in national debt in the period of 5 years. So when you pump $8 trillion into the system, there's obviously going to be a buyer of those $8 trillion that needs to be purchased from the Treasury. Whether it's a foreign investor or the Treasury, the Federal Reserve itself, or whether it's an investor who's afraid of the markets and gone to fixed income, those dollars have been absorbed. So if $8 trillion has been purchased, and we know, you know, roughly four of it or so has been purchased by the Federal Reserve, someone else is buying the other portion of that.
China, right?
China's got some of it. But a lot of it is the U.S. pension funds, the U.S. investor, corporations, banks. And so because of all those things, we do feel like there is the potential that if interest rates were to rise and people felt like either the Federal Reserve was going to step out and begin to taper or whatever the case may be to begin that rotation out of fixed income, that in that case that there are a lot of dollars that would be looking for something, and that potential yield would come from dividends in the equity markets.
And so they'd move it to equity because right now the return isn't anything on the cash, right?
Correct. Cash is basically mattress filling
for us right now. Imagine if that goes into the market and they start investing in stocks, then the market could go even higher than it is today.
That's correct. And you know, one of the things you look at is the PE multiples that have expanded in 2013. That was one of the things Wilmington Trust felt like was going to be a key component of market activity in this year, and it has played out very well for us from that perspective. I think the biggest risk for investors today is that rally continues. Although I know that we're going up against market highs here, and as a firm, we feel like, you know, we're fairly valued right now. You can have a continuation of PE multiple expansion that occurs just because there's a demand for the assets, or the risk of other assets seems to be greater than the equity markets themselves. And so if that rotation type of situation occurs, I think you could continue to see multiple expansion as we move forward into 2014, 2015.
Well, they don't ring a bell when they're at a low, and they don't ring a bell when you're at a high, right? So you're taking a best guess, and that's why you need trusted advisors to kind of tell you these things, right?
That's correct. And so we tend to focus, as we were talking earlier, about looking at a client's cash flow. And so, you know, we go into the wealth preservation phase with a change of psychology. Just like dealing with divorce and marriage issues and family issues, we also have to deal with the psychology of money. And one of those things with...
And money is a highly charged...
oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like people, that they don't like to talk about money, that, you know, or they brag about it, or they behave in a way that's maybe more, you know, more... it appears like they have more money than they really do. I mean, you probably see both sides of the spectrum, right?
We get to see it all. and the nice thing and the bad thing is that we get to see it all. I mean, we know the truth in lifestyles and spending rates and those types of things for families, even though the general public may perceive it to be different for
right.
those individuals. But yeah, I mean, the psychology is a big part of the game. It's definitely a charged issue for every family, for most individuals.
So is that true across the board, no matter how much wealth? I mean, you've probably seen throughout your career people with a little bit of money and people with a lot of money, and money is kind of has that same psychological charge at no matter what level they're at?
That it does. It's funny. You'll find Warren Buffett's at the Warren Buffett level, and you'll find Warren Buffett's at the, you know, I just came out of college and I'm starting to save level. But you'll also find people who are living paycheck to paycheck at the I just came out of college level, and you'll find people who live in paycheck to paycheck that own big businesses. It's just a psychology of how people address money, how they spend money, how they deal with their money.
Now, what's the most rewarding part of your job?
I'd have to say helping people sleep at night. It's one of those things where if you take all the information that you receive on a daily basis about the markets and you try to process that without the background and the experience, I'm assuming it's very overwhelming. I've been in this business for 16 years now, so I've had the opportunity to go through several different market cycles,
right,
in some major things such as the tech bubble and 9/11 and those types of things that have had big effects on the markets and big
And sometimes your clients think, wow, he's a genius. And then the next day it's like, wow, he's an idiot.
That's right. And so for us, it becomes difficult because you do have that battle of being checked every day on how well you're performing and whether you're up or down in the markets. So, you know, if you've got a guess that something's going to be doing well in the next 3 years, but it's not doing well for the next 2 weeks, you're going to hear about it for the next 2 weeks.
So now, is that do you recommend to your clients you should read everything about the stock market every day and every time it goes up? Do you want them to be that involved? Because you probably have the challenge of that is it's you'd be crazy. You know, it goes up for no apparent reason, it goes down for no apparent reason, and you don't want calls every day. I mean.
Correct. We tend to tell clients to turn the TV off and put the newspaper down.
Good advice. And, right. Just meet with us every couple of months, and we're going to walk you through what's happening. Because you can't pay attention to that granular, right?
Yeah.
I mean, remember there was a time when everybody was a day trader,
right?
Like, oh, this is so easy. You know, it's a bull market. The market's going through the roof, and everybody's system was working fantastically, you know?
That's right.
And now you don't see as many day traders as you did back then.
No, I think that the hedge funds and the big traders, the systematic traders came through and took those guys out. But it's definitely an ebb and flow. You know, we tend to get more calls when the market's down. We tend to get less calls when the market's up.
Right.
It's just the nature of the game. But you know, we tell clients, let us worry about what's going on in the markets. I do like for clients to be educated on what's going on in the markets, because part of being able to sleep at night is to be able to understand what your portfolio is doing and why it's invested the way it is. And there are certain reasons why we have to take risks. There are certain hurdle rates that we have to obtain in our portfolios in order to sustain our lifestyles. But at the same time, if you tend to focus on that information too much, it will begin to drive your life.
So walk us through the Wilmington Trust client experience. What can Lee and his 3 million plus expect in this experience with you?
Yeah, I would say our biggest attribute for clients is our client service. We tend to have smaller books of business, which means we work as a team with fewer clients.
Mm-hmm.
And that transitions into the individuals who are working with you, understanding the professionals that are in your world, your accountant, your CPA, your attorneys, your insurance providers, if they're involved. We know them pretty well. We talk to them quarterly if we need to, for accountants, especially with the tax situation.
So you have strategic relationships with the larger CPA firms around town?
We do, and we also we tend to be driven – our relationships tend to be driven by our clients. So our clients usually have a CPA mm-hmm. that they're working with, and we tend to begin to develop the relationships with those CPAs once we meet with them.
Mm-hmm. But you probably run into the same firms – right?
We do. It's a very small circle, not only in the wealth management world, but also in the financial services world.
I'm sure in the legal world, like you, there's probably a cluster of y'all that kind of share some clients.
Yes, that's true. You could probably basically get to know all your potential centers of influence for client referral within a year or two of this business. And then basically you have to at that point develop those relationships with those people.
Right.
But it's not a very big world. There's you know, a handful of players out there.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more and maybe have a more in-depth conversation with you, is there a website? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, the Wilmington Trust has a website. It's www.wilmingtontrust.com. And that website just takes you to our general information for the company.
And that's a national firm, right?
That's a national firm. So if you're listening across the country, then that's a place where you can go and find a wealth management provider in your area.
And then you put your zip code, or you can find it by state or city.
Correct. And they'll put you in touch with someone in your market. And for those in the Southeast, you can contact us in Atlanta. You can reach me by email at mmorgan@wilmingtontrust.com
mm-hmm.
or at the office at 404-760-2156.
Good stuff. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your time.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our guest today, Michael Morgan from Wilmington Trust. We will see you all next week on Results Matter Radio.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.